You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, when you use promo code DNVR, you can make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. And that's only with promo code DNVR and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today, as he does each and every week, the voice of the Colorado Rockies on AT&T Sportsnet, as well as the voice of the Drew Goodman podcast, it's Drew Goodman.
What's up, Patrick? How are you, man?
Oh, doing good. Enjoying some a little bit of downtime between the All-Star Game festivities. I know you're doing the same. It's nice to kind of catch your breath just a little bit during this time of the year.
100%. I mean, last year was a whirlwind in that it was awesome because we all got to partake since it was in Denver, and it was tremendous. The city, was still kind of coming out of COVID, and the city really, I thought, looked great, et cetera. And so that was a lot of fun. But this year, I know you were going to go and then opted not to go. But, to have 4 days off when you do what we all do and you live it every single day and you're traveling all the time, it really is, whether you're a player or a broadcaster or a coach, to kind of let your hair down for a moment. It's much needed. So kind of raced up to the mountains and spent some time up here, and I'm actually taking the first 2 days off of a series in Milwaukee. Jenny's going to fill in, and I'm going to go headed to the Midwest, watch Zach, one of my boys, play tomorrow, or for a couple of days, and then head up there. So it's been good.
That's something that last year when, we've been doing this thing for over a year now, I hadn't really thought about the whole aspect of, the Rockies broadcasters not really getting that same break, right? Because the All-Star game is right in your backyard. And in addition to that, it's coming off the heels of that 60-game season. So it's like that must have just felt like a 250-game season last year compared to the previous year. It must have been just an extra level of grinding that went down in 2021 for you guys.
Yes and no. First of all, number one, and I don't say this in a frivolous manner. I've said this to you before, and you and I have become good friends, so you know this to be true. I know this is true for you as well, is that we are really fortunate to do what we do. We love to do what we do. And it's how we make our living too. So believe me, we were thrilled when they got back 60 games. We wish it was 162. And then last year we weren't traveling. So it was a challenge, and we had talked all about that in the past. It was a challenge doing the road games out of the studio. It's not the same thing from an information standpoint, from a broadcast standpoint, from a clarity in what you're seeing standpoint. But when the game was over, I drove home, and I do enjoy being on the road. So now when the game's over and we're coming back home, we don't leave the ballpark for an hour, and then we go to the plane, and it's not, listen, it's great, but it's different. So you're kind of back in that mode again this year of what it used to be like, and I embrace it, man. It's a fun grind.
Yeah, you've actually taken that in stride because you're still going out, you're running, you're getting your exercise in, you're still finding time to go out after the game and grab a bite to eat and stuff. But again, that's the first time you've been doing that in about 3 years, I guess, right?
Yeah, and because you and I are both runners, I'm not at your level. You're a nut job. You go on these 2-day runs that last for hundreds of miles. But I do enjoy it. It's a sightseeing. It's cathartic from a mental standpoint, but it's, you have your city. Like in Milwaukee, I love running out on Lake Michigan and, you know, run through downtown and then out past the art museum on Lake Michigan. It's a great run. And so I really enjoy those. We'll be in Chicago for a week straight, the latter part of the year, and running out on that portion of Lake Michigan and, you know, and then down Michigan Avenue and just, yeah, I look forward to it. It's how I start my day. And, you know, and then I think I said this to you on the podcast, it's probably 2 weeks ago, time flies, Patrick, but when we were in LA at Dodger Stadium, not only the runs in LA that that I enjoyed, but just being at Dodger Stadium again and all the focus of the baseball universe 2 days ago and 3 days ago was on Dodger Stadium. That's a special place, man. And it was great to be back there. I know we love to hate the Dodgers out here, but you know, that's one now, the older stadiums, and they still do a really good job of maintaining it. And you got the, you know, the mountains in the background, and it's special. And so it was good to be back there.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful facility that I think probably for a while, and maybe the late 80s, 90s, even early 2000s, we didn't have that same reverence for it, right? Because you had a lot of older stadiums, and now with all the newer stadiums that exist, it's the third oldest ballpark now. So it doesn't have quite that same history, of course, as Wrigley and Fenway, but it's right there now. And kind of over time, I think you say, okay, yeah, it's not a concrete donut, right? It's not from that generation of the 70s. So it does lack, obviously, some of the modern bells and whistles. But as you said, because of the view and because now it's been there for so long, now we can kind of step back and say, yeah, this is, you know, one of the baseball meccas that we have left remaining here in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's iconic views. I mean, the San Gabriels, as we were talking about, the palm trees that align, you know, in each bullpen in the corner, and those bleachers, and Sandy Koufax pitched there. Don Drysdale pitched there. There's quite a bit of history because you're talking about 60 plus years. Yeah, you can't say Babe Ruth pointed out, you know, like you can at Wrigley, or, you know, or talk about Ted Williams at Fenway or Babe Ruth, you know, at Fenway. I understand that, but it's still a unique and, you know, and special venue.
Kirk Gibson, 1988 World Series.
Kirk Gibson,
I mean, that's
88,
some
sure.
Nice piece of history. Sure. Yeah. That's still the last, you know, one of the last times they hosted a World Series. Cause again, we know 2020. Was down there in Arlington. Again, one of those strange wrinkles, just like this being only the second All-Star game ever at Dodger Stadium, which is kind of mind-blowing for a stadium that has been around for that long. 1980 was the only other time.
I didn't catch that because, as we'll talk about when we get into the All-Star stuff, I saw, you know, a part of the game. I was in a restaurant and I like to watch the All-Star game, and I saw some of the snippets of the audio. And again, we'll chat about that in a moment, but I did not realize till you said that, Patrick, that it's only the second time they hosted. I guess it makes sense because you're really going to be once every 25 to 30 years now. You know, and that's why last year and having my boys all there for me as a dad was so special, because we're a baseball family, not just because of me, but, you know, my boys playing, and realizing that, okay, the next time this comes around to Coors Field, I'm going to be, you know, older considerably, and they are. So to be able to share it together, that was special. And I'm sure there are a lot of families that felt the same way.
Next season.
Twice in Dodger Stadium in 60 years. Wow.
I hadn't either until watching the broadcast, I think. Seattle hosts next year. I don't think they've announced 2024 and 2025. And then I think 2026, I don't know that they've officially announced it, but I think it's supposed to be back in Philadelphia for the sesquicentennial anniversary of the United States, 250 years for that. So that's kind of fitting. And they also hadn't hosted since 1996. Do the math, 30 years, 30 teams. So it kind of lines up nicely.
Shoot, Pat, you know, you know everything, man. I did not know that, but yes, that makes a lot. That makes a lot of sense, and that's awesome. I mean, and that's one. start planning ahead. It's 4 years, Patrick, but we got to get there. You and I got to be there for that one. That's going to be cool. And I say that because you're a Jersey boy. I'm a New York guy. The history of our country, that's one I think we need to be at.
Oh, for sure. I was at the 96 All-Star game. So that was a special one for me, and being there for the Home Run Derby and being in all the way in the upper deck in left field and McGuire hitting a ball. Like, I'm on the concourse area. I'm on the middle part of the upper deck, and he hits a ball like a row or two below me. So, you know, I've got some fond memories of Veterans Stadium. It was a dump, but for a period of time, it was my dump. And I'm sure you could say the same about Shea Stadium, right? That was your dump.
I'll talk to Patrick, quick story. Did you ever, I'm guessing probably not. I don't know. You weren't in the media business yet that would have taken you into, you know, the media or broadcast areas of Shea Stadium. Is that a correct assumption?
No, but side note, I did go on a tour there at 12 years old. My uncle had season tickets. We were in the press box. He said, Patrick, ask the guy about the apple. It's 9 o'clock at night in the middle of winter. There's snow on the ground all over Shea Stadium. It was unfortunate. I didn't get to walk out there. The guy who's giving the tour says, hey, kid, come here, hit this button. Pushed a button, and in the middle of the darkness in Queens, that red apple came up and it lit up and it said home run and it went back down. And so I got goosebumps now even telling that. So that's my inside of Shea Stadium story. Sorry.
That's really cool. And this is how non-observant I am and what a dumbass I am, because I grew up, as you know, we're both, you know, big Mets fans. The apples at Citi Field, right? Do they have, I mean, I assume they took that. They had to have, right?
I think it's on display out in front of Citi, and then they have like a newer one out in center field.
So do they do that if a Met hits a homer? Does the apple that? I mean, wouldn't you keep that tradition?
I would think so. Yeah.
Never noticed. I'm going to try. Nick, we're there in a few weeks, so I'll
wipe the sweat from your eyes.
Right.
Wipe the sweat from your eyes from the humidity, and maybe you'll see the apple pop up.
Right. Right. So anyhow, really quickly, so this first time, I'm thrilled. I'm calling a Mets Rockies game, or actually the first time I did a game at Shea Stadium, I believe I was doing it nationally for Fox or FX, and I'm thrilled, man. I'm at Shea Stadium. This was my ballpark, right? We used to sneak in there after games, or stick around, or sneak into the ballpark. So I go to the booth that was where, you know, Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy and Lindsey Nelson and these iconic figures that I grew up on who called the Mets forever, right? And I walk in there. There's why I'm not, you know me, I'm not the tallest guy in the world, right? Patrick, I'm ducking. There's like just loose wires hanging down, and you kind of sit there and you kind of, it's just not what you'd have expected.
And it wasn't 2008 when they're getting ready to, you know, demolish the place, you know, to make room for the new one. It was
right.
A little earlier than that. No excuses.
It was beyond repair at that point in time. But
yeah, yesterday I was at an event. I was at a Sabre luncheon that we have, you know, like 30, 35 people show up each and every month, diehard baseball fans, diehard Rockies fans. And it's wonderful hanging out with them at Blake Street Tavern. It's almost always the third Wednesday of every month. And driving in, you know, into the city, and just looking at the stadium there and just feeling, you know, how lucky I am and we are to go there. And just that, you know, that's the star of this franchise is the stadium, because it's a gem. And the way that the Rockies have maintained it, it's just such a beautiful facility. And it just embodies baseball, right? It's a baseball mecca now, I think, at this point. And you know, for all the other ballparks that were built in and around its era, I don't think people have quite the same amount of reverence for those other state, like Progressive Field in Cleveland. No. You know, Guaranteed Rate Field in Chicago, which was a couple years earlier. No. Sky Dome, you know, is a little bit older and, you know, was a modern marvel at the time. But Coors Field is of the newer stadiums, it's like an instant classic. We're very lucky to go there each and every day.
Yeah, and so for people who listen to you every day and you know, read you every day, this is not the biased, you know, this is where we go to work every day. When people who spend their life working in other ballparks, come to Coors Field, you hear the same refrain that this is a special place. And you hear it from fans who and there's so many, you know, great baseball fans that, you know, try to go to see games over a period of time in every ballpark. And Coors Field always ranks near the very top in terms of experience, in terms of how well it's maintained, in terms of, you know, the friendliness of the ushers. So, yeah, I like how you described that, it's, you know, it is so central to the Rockies beyond just the Rockies as a baseball club.
I want to talk about the Rockies' first half and preview the second half, but, you know, we were just talking about the All-Star game. How did you feel about the programming in general? The game itself, kind of quiet, right? 5 runs scored. A lot of them came early. So on the baseball side, you know, it was okay. It was good. But on the entertainment side, how'd you like all the guys that were mic'd up? I thought that was refreshing to see that back and forth, particularly between Nestor Cortez and Jose Trevino. That was really cool seeing a pitcher and catcher just talking to each other straight up like that.
Yeah, I have to go back and watch some of the other snippets. I told you earlier, because we were in a restaurant, you know, bar restaurant, and we were watching it. And I did go back and listen to some of it. I had a guy that, you know, is a huge Rockies fan, reach out privately and said, I don't understand it. I enjoyed it, but I'm seeing a lot of criticism. Well, that's, I guess, the world we live in now, especially in the Twitter universe, or you're going to see criticism. I think it's a great opportunity from a television standpoint and a presentation standpoint to do exactly what they did. Mic everybody up. Take people behind the curtain. The more in life that you can, or let's just talk about sports, the sports world life, the more you can take people behind the curtain, Patrick, the better it's going to be for the fan. The experience is better. They see things they wouldn't ordinarily see, which is awesome. And what better place to do it than an All-Star game? Because it doesn't matter at the end of the day who wins. It doesn't. Yeah, the pitchers and the players, they all have a lot of pride. Nobody wants to be made a fool of. But I thought the premise of it and the execution of it, based on what I saw, was great. It was great. You're always going to have people who find reasons not to like, but I'm with you on that.
Yeah, baseball needs to evolve. Like, bottom line, I mean, all sports do. Like, any industry, you just have to continue to look, you know, to that evolution. And so you've got to embrace that. And even if you might not like it at first, and there could be some different things to work out, you have to be able to change with the times. And I think baseball is, of all of the four major sports, is kind of the most old timey and the most traditional. And I think we're starting to break those chains. You know, we got the City Connect uniforms coming on, and, you know, they're a little bit quirky. We're seeing players getting mic'd up. We're seeing bigger and better celebrations, you know, the bat flips and those unwritten rules of, like, you know what, why not? Why do we do things this way? Let's kind of examine it. And like you said, tear down that fourth wall, take people behind the scenes. And anytime you can do that, again, you put the players in the game first and foremost, and I think people, you know, really want to see that.
Absolutely, and I know when who was it Manoah on the mound, he's dealing, and Smoltz says, hey, throw him the slider here, and he ends up hitting McNeil in the foot. I mean, that's the only place that's going to take place is the third week of July at an All-Star game. Do we reach a point in time where maybe occasionally there's that player that can play a regular season game and wear a microphone? I know we mic'd up a guy in the bullpen. I'll leave the name out because there was a little bit of controversy that took place. But many years ago, this goes back better part of 20 years ago on a Rockies broadcast during the regular season, you know, he was kind enough to wear a microphone. Now, it was live. It wasn't live to the truck. Let's play Patrick Lyons here and take him through, you know, something edited, and Patrick's talking to one teammate, talking to another teammate. There he is, hustling and making a catch. We've all seen that, right? Well, this was live. And unfortunately, this is why it hasn't been done since, he used an inappropriate word. And so, you know, the powers that be within the organization naturally said, we're not doing that anymore. So But again, anytime you can take people behind the curtain a little bit and give them something they haven't seen, because the proliferation of sports on television over the last 30, 40 years, most people have seen everything, heard every type of question asked after games, before games, that sort of thing. So if you give them something that they truly don't get to experience, I think it's a win.
Thanks to everybody knocking down our door on the corner of Colfax and York at the DNVR bar. Look, we're undergoing a little bit of construction right now, but that's to bring you a bigger and better product, a better bar, a better location for all the wonderful watch parties. You saw all the clips for the Avalanche. I mean, they did the heavy lifting, obviously, by lifting Lord Stanley's cup. But man, we just had fun hanging out, partying. We do it for Nuggets games. We do it for Broncos, Rockies, you name it. It's going to be up and running in no time. In the meantime, you can still become a member to the DNVR.com for only 50 cents for your first month. And while we wait to hang out on the corner of Colfax and York at the DNVR bar, we can all hang out in the members-only Discord where you don't have to worry about politics or a-holes. You can just talk Rockies, pro wrestling, food, all the different topics and different things that make us community that we're interested in, link up with other people from the Rocky Mountain region or right here in Denver. And as we've heard from some folks in the community, they've made some love connections there. So that's always a wonderful thing. Very much like the folks over at Lightshade, who are incredibly wonderful and helpful. They know their product so well. They've got the top products for cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower, edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. But again, what they have more than anything else is the expertise to make sure that you've got the right product and you're not throwing your money away. You're getting the best bang for your buck, whatever it is that you may need. They've got 11 Denver metro area locations. Their 6th Ave location is fantastic. That's the epicenter of everything that they've got going on. But there's 11 in the Denver metro area. And mention code DNVR because they're going to give you 25% off all non-sale items. You can check them out, of course, at lightshade.com. But walk in and get that amazing customer service so they can take care of you the way they've taken care of millions of DNVR members over the years. Yeah, millions. I said it. The one thing Rockies fans haven't seen a ton of is Chris Bryant. Of course, 2 stints on the IL, missed 50 games. They're 20-30 when he's gone. But if you look at what their record has been with him back, including, you know, the 3 games he missed for the paternity list, they went 2-3 there. Rockies have been pretty solid. You know, right now they're 43-50. They're 4th place in the NL West. You know, they're 6.5 games back of the 3rd and final wild card, 10th overall in the NL. So they've got a lot of teams to jump. But if you frame it from the perspective of, okay, now they finally have got their full squad and then some, because they got Jose Urania, they got a 6-man rotation, which it sounds like the Rockies are going to go with here for a little while. You can say, you know what, this team might be a little bit better, and you could get your hopes up a little bit in the second half, despite the 7 games under 500 in the first half. Is there a little bit of hope there that, you know, there's a week and a half before the trade deadline where maybe this is where you can decide if you're going to be buyers, sellers, or even stand put at the trade deadline?
You would think so, Patrick. The Rockies played really well that last week, and I thought they played well on the road trip. They went 3 or 4 in Arizona. All the games, even though they were all losses, they were competitive games at Dodger Stadium. And that game Sunday, this is why I'm not a betting man. I certainly I've never really been that way. But on Sunday, they had a journeyman guy going, a young guy, but a guy with a 6 ERA, basically. And Gomber was going, and the Rockies had all the momentum. They win Sunday. They go into the break just 5 beneath 500. You really like their chance of winning that game Sunday. And unfortunately, it really turned out to be not a close game. You're 7 under 500. I said this on my podcast last week. I'm sure I've repeated it with you. I'm sure you've, you know, said it with by yourself or with Susie, that relevancy in baseball begins, especially in the second half, at 500. And I know 500 is no reason to throw a party, but in baseball, you build from 500 forward, the extra playoff team with the wild card. They're going to have to go on a pretty significant run pretty quickly. because if you're just treading water for a couple, 3 weeks, and you're still 7, 6, 7, 8 games below 500 on August 1st, does that preclude you from making a spectacular run? Of course it doesn't. But I think given the momentum they had the last couple of weeks, they really need to get off to a flying start in the second half. And the other part of it, which I know you've touched on, is that the second half schedule, by certain measurements, is the toughest in all of baseball.
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, a lot less home games, too. Again, 9 games on the road in California to end up their season, 3 in San Francisco, and then 6 weeks in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. So that's rough. So they're definitely going to be up against it in that way. But, you know, Brian, I would probably be, you know, he's played really well. And after, you know, really finally getting to see him hit in a more elongated period of time, I'm kind of convinced that next year, maybe 2024, he's going to win a batting title. I don't know if you've gotten that sense, but again, we know Coors Field can help make batting champs. There's been 11 already in 29 full seasons that the Rockies have produced there. But I just get the sense that the way he's able to kind of spray the ball around a little bit, we could kind of see that like second coming of Michael Kadir, a player who, you know, is going to win a batting title here in a couple years. Have you had similar thoughts? What's your take on that?
Well, I hadn't thought about it at all until I was listening to your podcast the other day, and I heard you bring that up with Susie, and make the, you know, declaration, if you will, just like you did there, that you think that he's going to win a batting title. And I understand why you've arrived at that, and I certainly hope it happens. That'd be great. I will throw, because it made me think, well, I was running and I'm listening to you, and I was like, all right, you know what? Neil Patrick may be onto something, possibly. I would rather see, like, this is where I went with it. I would rather see him maintain a 900 OPS plus for a few years here. You know, the central part of that 7-year deal, we all understand, and management understands, in any long-term deal, there's probably going to be a drop-off, a decline, when a player moves into his mid-30s and beyond. Now, we're seeing a renaissance from Charlie Blackmon. That's another subject. But the way I spun that in my head as I was listening to you was, yeah, possibly. I mean, Patrick's on to something. But if I had to make a choice, I would rather see him produce a 900-plus OPS for the next few years running. I think that ultimately will benefit the Rockies more. Not saying, hey, maybe if he wins a batting title and also hits 30-plus home runs, great, awesome. But I think that will be really significant if he continues to be coupled with a CJ Cron, who's going to be in that neighborhood, it looks like, as well.
Yeah, for the sabermetric inclined fans out there, and for anyone that doesn't, you know, understand maybe certain statistics and raw numbers like that, having a higher OPS or having an OPS in a certain at a certain level or a certain number is more indicative of winning games than just having a good batting average, because you're getting on base, which means you're making less outs. And when you are getting a hit, you're hitting for power, you're getting extra bases. And so OPS way more important than the batting average element, to your point.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That would be way more important.
Right. And career wise, Patrick, and I wasn't dismissing your thought. I found it interesting. I was like, yeah, we've seen it before. We saw it with Kadir. We saw it with Morneau, the twin buddies. And it certainly is a possibility. We've seen him as a good enough hitter. He's an on-base percentage guy around 376 in his career. I think for the Rockies, most importantly, to be the kind of team that everybody hopes they're going to be going forward, you need him in that 900-plus OPS. You need somebody with him if it's a CJ Cron, and you need – you know, a couple of guys, 850 plus. I think Brendan Rodgers is certainly capable of that. And then you're talking about a lineup that has length, that is formidable, that is tough to navigate, and can also do damage on the road. Not as significant as there's going to be at home, but can still win some games by producing offense away from Coors Field.
All right, Chris Bryant, Charlie Blackmon, we've seen what those guys have done. Brendan Rodgers, as you've touched on. Any first half surprises of guys who either maybe in long stretches of time or short stretches, because we've seen about four or five different major league debuts, who would you say has been almost like a surprised, undervalued, underrated first half player for the Rockies here so far?
Wow, that's a great question, an interesting question, and a lot of names pop to mind. So forgive me if I don't just give you one or two. And I'm probably going to jump all over the place, but I'll give you right off the top. Jose Iglesias, I mean, who had him hitting 300 and hitting 360 on the road, and now throwing, you know, I figured he'd throw out a few home runs, that there was none for like 3 months, and now he's thrown out three pretty significant home runs, actually. You know, he plays defense with a flair sometimes, you know, maybe that gets in the way a little bit, but better than I thought he was going to be. And I don't mean that as faint praise. I think the next place I go, and this is in no particular order, I'm not putting Iglesias in front of whoever I mention after this, but Daniel Bard really struggled last year, especially against lefties. And he lost his closer's job on a team that wasn't any good, right? He bounced back this year, and I'm disappointed for him personally, because you know him also, Patrick. This is a smart guy, great guy. Forget just the great story of his return to baseball, but he's a good guy, and he's been as good as any closer just about in baseball. And that's been a surprise, because lefties aren't hitting them, righties aren't hitting them. When you're sitting in the press box, Patrick, and the Rockies are up, you know, 4-2 in the ninth, and he comes out, whether it's home or road, you're pretty much going, hey, it's ball game over now. You were not saying that a year ago. You were not saying, In his heart of hearts, Bud Black wasn't feeling that, I'm sure, a year ago. So nice surprise in that, good for him to make some tweaks, and Daniel Bard's become an elite closer. Real quickly, because I don't want to get super long with on Lucas Gilbreth has emerged as a nice piece to protect leads, and it's a bonus that he's on the left side. You know, Tyler Kinley, it's such a shame he got hurt. He had taken a real nice step forward in setting up games. He pitched at an all-star caliber as a setup guy. And the other one that jumps to mind very quickly is the aforementioned Charlie Blackmon, in that Charlie hit 13 home runs last year, all-star break, he's got 14. You know, the slug has been, you know, completely different from a year ago. So, you know, those are the guys that to me have been, at some level, you know, mildly surprising, again, on the positive side.
Yeah, no, my list would be very similar. And again, of course, you've got some really great, not surprise performances, but just performances that jump out, or even stretches of play. Chad Kuhl did it, you know, Jonathan Daza was over 300 for a period of time. So, you know, everyone's been kind of chipping in, doing their thing to try to make up for that loss of Chris Bryant in the first half. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know if there's any real second half predictions, because as we've been saying, you know, a lot, you know, really may depend on what they do during this four game series in Milwaukee. It's a strange one, because they've got a typical Sunday day game. It'll be 12:10 here in Colorado, and then a 6 o'clock night game in Milwaukee, which is kind of baffling, before two games against the White Sox, four against the Dodgers, and then they're out on the road in San Diego. I'll actually be out there for that. We have some big coverage there for the trade deadline. Have to go for a run at Balboa Park. You know, it's part of my job. It's part of my coverage, right? I got to create some fun and interesting content. So I guess I got to do some miles in Balboa Park, as it were. But I think the next couple weeks might be indicative of that. Anyone that you think, you know, is on the precipice of a breakout? Maybe they've already been playing well in the first half, but is set to maybe have an even bigger second half here for the Rockies going forward.
I'll start with the guy that you mentioned 15, 20 minutes ago, Chris Bryant. It's got to begin with Chris Bryant. I mean, Chris Bryant and Buddy is not shy about saying this in not just privately, but to all the media that gathers. He said this a few times, that Chris Bryant is CJ Cron has had a great year. He had a really good year last year. He said Chris Bryant is our best all around player. He's our best hitter, and he needs to be. And he has been that, certainly on that road trip where he hit four home runs. They need a second half of a healthy Chris Bryant and a Chris Bryant who continues to play at the level we've seen the last couple of weeks. That would be number one for me. We need a continuation of what we've seen from Brendan Rodgers, subtracting April, where he's been an 850 plus OPS guy. We need Charlie to continue to do his thing. And then you probably, the next guy I would mention for the Rockies to truly make this move we were discussing earlier, where they can win 15 out of 20 and get back, you know, in the 500 realm and try to build from there. Ryan McMahon, who I've seen incremental improvements, you know, he's getting on base more because he walks more, but seven home runs for a guy who has, you know, light tower power, he'd be the first if he was sitting here with us to say, yeah, you know, I'm trying to be a good hitter and I'm trying to get good pitches to hit, but you'd like to see him have a, you know, a 14, 15 home run second half. And I think if he does that, when we talk about, as we were a few moments ago, lengthening that lineup, now you're talking about McMahon hitting in that sixth spot frequently where you go, man, that's a handful for any pitcher to navigate with, you know, the aforementioned guys continue at the same level they played at in the first half.
Outside of an error over the weekend, P had been playing really solid defense overall. In fact, there's a lot of defensive metrics out there to suggest that he's kind of, you know, he's back. He's good in a real major way. So if he's got the glove, the defense stuff down, yeah, maybe now's that right time for the bat to start heating up.
Yeah. Because it we've seen it in there. I mean, what was last year? 24 homers, the year before 22, or the last full season, 22. And you were hoping when you and I would talk during spring training, and one of Buddy's things is you don't need a super breakout year from someone, but just like, you know, incremental improvement from some of the younger core, where Brendan Rodgers goes from 15 homers to 22, 24 homers, where Ryan McMahon goes from 22, 24 homers to 28, maybe 30 homers. And we haven't seen that yet because we know the Rockies have to homer more. The other one I'd throw out there, he's returned to the big leagues and he had, you know, a couple ball games that were, you'd constitute as nice, nothing, you know, outlandish. But if Sam Hilliard against right-handed pitching, you know, gets opportunities and he can, you know, have a second half where there's a couple games in there, oh, shoot, he just hit a three-run homer, and he had a two-homer game. And a little bit of what we've seen in snippets from him in the past, you need all hands on deck to make the kind of run we're talking about, Patrick, especially against a schedule that will be formidable. So, you know, those are a couple of areas that or a couple of individuals that if they can, you know, take that, you know, that step again, that would be, you know, real helpful to the cause.
I want to talk about the MLB draft and especially your guest this week.
Real quick, Patrick. I'm sorry. I want to throw one more thing because we're talking about position players and I don't want to be foolish. The sport's always going to be about pitching. I've said that a million times and a lot of people who are smarter than I am have said it forever. It will never change. So Herman at the top of that list, he has to pitch close to, or in an ideal world, like the all-star he was a year ago in the first half. It has to begin with him because he's the most talented starter. Kyle Freeland has to fall into line. And for, you know, most of his starts were pretty solid. Gomber, all those guys. Obviously, Jose Ureña has been a great story. If that could continue, wonderful. But I don't want to leave out that side of thing because it doesn't matter if somebody goes off in the second half offensively. You got to pitch better than they have so far, especially at the start or in the rotation.
And I like how, you know, Marquez has definitely seems to have gotten stronger over his last three, four, maybe five starts.
Yeah.
You're starting to see those glimpses there. And so thanks to the Pittsburgh Pirates for helping get Herman Marquez back to his best, as they do every year. And so we appreciate the Pirates for that. And millions of folks in the Denver metro area have been missing out on the Nuggets and Avalanche for years. Some of you even miss out on the Rockies because it might be difficult for you to get AT&T SportsNet, or maybe you can't afford it. But guess what? Right now, you can get all of that. AT&T SportsNet, Altitude Sports, even the DNVR Sports Channel that we have on YouTube. You get that right on your own television for only $25 per month, plus the cost of a receiver. And even then, that's not accurate because use code DNVR when you go to ivaca.tv/DNVR, and you're going to save $10 off your first 3 months. So it's even less than that. Never have to worry again about missing out on Nugs, Avs, Rockies. That also extends to Rapids, Mammoth, CSU, Rams. I mean, they've got such a great package there for you at Ivaca TV. So get yourself hooked up. Ivaca.tv/DNVR. We know Denver is a major sports town. We got the Big Four. We also even have MLS. But the other thing that we have is rugby. That's right. We've got the American Raptors. Check out AmericanRaptors.com so you can learn so much more about the sport of rugby. They're doing it right in our backyard down at Infinity Park in Glendale. We've got a guy, Colton Strickler, doing amazing things over on the DNVR Rugby podcast. Amazing interviews with players, coaches, some of the best in the world. And he's also giving you really good betting advice when it comes to the Super Rugby, which is already in the middle of their season. It's really fantastic. And again, learn a little bit more about the game of rugby. Kids 12 and under, get in for free. So find all that information out about, again, some of the greatest athletes that this country has produced. Now they're learning the game of rugby, and they've picked it up very quickly. They are very good. Watch them and enjoy them. Go over to AmericanRaptors.com so you can get your tickets for the next big event down at Infinity Park in Glendale, Colorado. This week on the Drew Goodman podcast is Danny Montgomery, and he goes into a lot about this year's crop of picks that they got, 22 picks. Four of the first 50 were really nice. Before I get into that, I figured I'd ask you a trivia question since I'll tie this in. We've got the Hall of Fame inductions going on this weekend. Which is really exciting. Six guys, obviously headlined by David Ortiz, and in my book, also headlined by Buck O'Neill. But 45 current Hall of Famers were drafted and, you know, obviously had great careers. I'm not going to have you name all 45 of them. The first was Johnny Bench in 1965. But my question to you is this: how many Hall of Famers right now were drafted in the 1990s? What do you think about that one? Yeah. Doesn't seem that long ago, right? 1990s, but.
There's a loud motorcycle in the background. I apologize.
Thought it might have been a hummingbird, but okay, we'll go with a motorcycle. Yeah,
that'd be a big hummingbird. In the 90s, well, Patrick, if you were born in 90, it would make you 42 right now.
32.
So I'm going to say David Ortiz. I'm going to say, I'm doing a bad job of this, but I'm going to say two or three. I got to pick one. I'll say three.
You went the right way. Four. I don't know that I was surprised. It was just something I hadn't thought about. You had Chipper Jones going first overall in 1990 and Mike Messina in the 90 draft, Derek Jeter in 92. And then in 1995, Roy Halladay. So four in the 90s. I thought that's kind of neat.
By the way, I screwed that up. I made it age instead of draft year. That was silly. So I probably would have gone higher than that. But so good. I'm glad I messed it up. But four. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. We'll edit that out. Oh, you nailed it. Four. Look at that. Yeah. See, that's, you got a streak.
Again.
Eight in a row here.
Hey, real quick. Did you see? I forget where it was mentioned. It wasn't your podcast I was listening to. I don't remember which one it was, but the 1971 All-Star Game, Patrick, and you read everything. 1971 All-Star Game, I want to say featured 26 future Hall of Famers. And then of the guys that didn't make it to the Hall of Fame, Joe Torre, who will make it as a manager, Bobby Bonds, Mickey Lolich, look back when you get a minute and you got to do something. Maybe next week we'll do it on your show. The 71 All-Star Game, and it was at Tiger Stadium, and Reggie, Hall of Famer. There was a ton of home runs. Reggie hit the one over the, you know, at a Tiger Stadium. It was like a who's who. The 71 All-Star Game, 26 Hall of Famers.
Wow. Yeah, that's that was an all-time classic one, how that just comes together for that. Yeah, that's been something that I wanted to kind of go back and review, like comparing the 98 All-Star Game in Colorado, how many Hall of Famers there are, and how many Hall of Famers there will be, because we know there's a lot of the steroid era guys. And then kind of saying, all right, well, in 2021, how many Hall of Famers did we all see down there on Coors Field? Of course, guys, you know, so many of them are just starting their careers, but it would be fun to kind of think, you know, are there more Hall of Famers in 21 or in 1998? You know, it's going to be a while until we know that answer, but it's always fun to speculate on stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be fun to look back and guess. And sometimes you say guys are on a Hall of Fame trajectory, but injuries, you know, derail their career. I mean, right now, Shohei Ohtani would be on a Hall of Fame trajectory, but his career is only a few years in length. And if God forbid, you know, he were to get hurt or something else unforeseen, you go, yeah, well, there was that 3 or 4 year period where he was the most captivating guy in the sport, but it was such a small universe ultimately that he's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you'd almost compare that to someone like a Bo Jackson, where you go like, yeah, oh man, this guy is kind of the face of the sport here in the late 80s. And then you look at his numbers and you go, he didn't have a great career. He had a great few seasons where he was a superstar, but career-wise, you know, falls short.
Well, I'll sew it back into the draft a little bit, and Danny Montgomery being on the show this week, and the kid they took second with their second pick out of the University of Florida, the outfielder who really hit, who has ties to Colorado and his favorite player growing up, was Troy Tulowitzki. Troy Tulowitzki would have been a Hall of Famer had he not dealt with so many injuries that really derailed what would have been a Hall of Fame career. He would have hit 350 to 450 homers. He would have, you know, a big physical shortstop. I don't have to go over his resume. He was a Hall of Famer. He had Hall of Fame talent, but won't ever make it because the injuries shortened his career significantly.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest what ifs. I think in all of Denver sports, right, is that guy. That was very much a shame. Did you get a chance to reach out, or at least, I'm sure you at least congratulated Matt on his son Jackson Holiday going first overall to the Baltimore Orioles? That just a great story. You gotta love that.
Yeah, it's great. I sent Matt a congratulatory text for, you know, he and Leslie and obviously Jackson. I mean, he's the one who's doing it. And, you know, you and I are going to be sitting here, Patrick, 3 years from now, and we're going to have the exact same conversation, because I'm telling you, Ethan Holiday has a chance to go one. He's going to be a first round. I will mark my word. Barring anything unforeseen, and I would hate to see that happen, he's a kid, Ethan Holiday will be a first-round pick and could be at the top of the first round when the draft takes place in 3 years. And I'll just tell you very quickly, in their lineup at Stillwater High this year, Jackson hit third. Ethan, who was a freshman, hit fourth. Ethan is bigger and more physical than Jackson. Just body type wise, Jackson at 17 homers, which is absurd, as we know, in a high school season. Ethan, as a freshman, hit 11.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Wow.
And in talking to Matt privately, you know, obviously he's proud of all his children, but he told me this when, you know, Ethan was 8 years old and Jackson was 11 years old. He goes, Ethan's the, you know, the terror. You know, he's going to be a giant. He's going to be more like physically like Matt. I mean, Jackson's a combination, but built probably right now more like Leslie.
Yeah. A lot of, there's always a lot of children of former ball players, but it's very much, you know, front load, even a couple of football players, right? Kumar Rocker's dad, Tracy, you know, played in the NFL, and Elijah Green's father, Eric Green, you know, a two-time Pro Bowler with the Steelers. You also had, I don't know if you saw this, this popped across my screen recently, Silas Ardoin, son of Danny Ardoin.
Yeah. Drafted on day three. Yeah, and cool. I remember when Danny's son went to LSU, right, or Texas. Where did he go?
Texas.
He went to Texas. But I remember we came down to LSU in Texas because he's from Louisiana. And I remember he was one of the top high school products in the country coming out. And I'm happy for Danny. I haven't talked to him in several years. But Danny, good guy, really good guy. And so it's neat to see his son, go where he did as well.
Another kid from Texas, Skylar Messenger, drafted by the Rockies, kid who grew up in Niwot. So you like that kind of story, as you touched on before with Sterling Thompson, the second pick, the 31st overall pick for the Rockies, was born in Longmont, raised in Florida, but still born in Longmont. So that's kind of a fun little story going on there. And the first overall pick, 10th overall in the draft, but first for the Rockies, Gabriel Hughes. You know, Rockies really like that, and Danny Montgomery obviously talks about that. The product of his grandfather played minor league baseball in the 60s, apparently, for like the Cubs and the Tigers. But Gabriel Hughes, what do you like about this guy, other than I'm hearing some comparisons to a guy like John Gray?
Well, he's going to focus just on one thing right now, and that's pitching, because he was a two-way guy. He pitched on a really good staff. I don't know if you noticed this before Gonzaga hurlers went in the first, or not in the first round, but went in the draft over the last several days. I listen to certain people and trust certain people like you do. Danny Montgomery is at the top of that list for me, and I've known Danny for a long, long time. And makeup and desire are really big to me. There are people with talent all the time that don't see their talent through because their drive doesn't match what was given to them potentially. And when you have, I guess, the greatest example or the most, the easiest and most noteworthy example would be Michael Jordan in basketball. Extremely gifted, right? Freakish talent, but his drive was better than everybody else's also. So when you have this kind of talent and this kind of drive, and so you get the greatest ever. This young man finished college in 3 years. He has a really good present in that, plus fastball, plus slider, off the chart makeup, and evidently off the chart desire. So that's the kind of guy you want to draft high in the first round. So let's see how it turns out. Patrick, again, stuff we've talked about, stuff you've talked about even when I'm not on, in that the baseball draft is getting more attention. People are more educated on some of the names, but it's not the NFL draft. It's not the NBA draft, because the next stop for these young men is going to be minor league baseball. It's not going to be, oh, the Cowboys drafted so-and-so out of Alabama. Now I'm watching him next autumn, play for the Cowboys. That's not how it works in baseball. So we'll learn over a period of time. But based on what I'm hearing, I think it sounds like a really good pick. And the other caveat to that pick would be what we just discussed a little while ago. The Rockies historically have done a good job finding really good position players and developing good position players. The Arenados and the Blackmans and the Stories and guys that weren't necessarily first rounders. Trevor was a supplemental. Arenado was a second round. Blackman was the second round. So Billy Schmidt and his crew and Danny Montgomery, they've done a really good job historically. They're going to be misses. We understand that. But it comes down to pitching, man. They got to develop pitching more than any other club in the sport, because notable free agents, Patrick, on the starting side, they ain't coming to Denver. They're not. Maybe if their careers, hit a pothole and they don't have a lot of offers, maybe they come to Denver. Chad Kuhl, you mentioned him earlier. That's worked out and he loves it here, and hopefully maybe they can continue on a couple year deal for a guy like Chad Kuhl. But they have to develop their own. So I love that that's where they went in the first round, and it wasn't a forced pick. It was a we love this guy pick, and hopefully it turns out nicely, 2, 3, 4 years from now.
Yeah, I think they had a lot of depth. Originally, I might not have been as excited with this crop, but the more I dug in deep to look at some of the players that they got, again, Sterling Thompson, didn't know as much about him. And as I started digging in, I'm saying, okay, I like this kid's makeup. I like what he can do. Those doubles can turn into home runs, certainly. And then a guy with a lot of power and Jordan Beck that they get third, number 38 overall, you know, is very exciting to kind of think about what he could do at Coors Field. And then Jackson Cox, a really good young upside high school pitcher at number 50. So overall, I thought, you know, don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. We know that. So I think they did a good job of branching out, even a couple day two picks that are really intriguing. So I think overall they did a nice job here in the 2022 MLB draft.
Yeah, I would agree with you. On paper, I like a lot of the things they did. I'll give you a comp with the Tennessee kid back to a year ago. The kid that, you know, I'm trying to claim as a relative. Goodman, who caught at Memphis, and you know he's playing a lot more first base now, but he has light tower power, and he's already moved to Spokane. And this is a guy that can really impact the baseball, just like the Beck kid with the Vols. So Hunter Goodman wasn't taken. I'm trying to remember what round he ended up going in, fifth or something like that, fourth, fifth, somewhere around there. So if you get a player that makes it, that was drafted in the fifth, the sixth, you know, go back to my partners, Ryan Spielborgs and Corey Sullivan, integral parts of some really good Rockies teams, maybe not superstars, but integral parts drafted in the seventh, eighth, ninth round. That's how you develop depth and quality that helps you win more than you lose at the major league level.
Yeah, and I think with the one of the great things that this week's episode with Danny Montgomery does, besides, again, it's going to get you primed for you know, the players that were drafted here in this crop, but it's going to allow you to get to know someone in the Rockies front office like Danny Montgomery, just the kind of classy character that he is, everything he's doing with the MVP tournament, and you know, it being inspired by Buck O'Neill, and it's important to know that the VP and assistant GM of scouting is a person of class, you know, and has great character, and I think that comes through really well this week.
Yeah, I don't know if you know DeMont at all.
Not too well. No.
Yeah, let me tell you what, and I'll introduce you if you want next time. You know, he's in town because he spends his life, you know, at fields all over the world. And he is one of those people truly that lights up a room, that when you meet him, you walk away and you're in a better space because you're like, that's a really good person. And that's Danny. And it's authentic. He's always been that way. And scouting is a people person, you know, industry also. And I think for those that listen to the podcast this week, not only you get, you know, greater insight as to what the Rockies did the last few days and what they like specifically about certain guys, especially the guys near the top of the draft, but you'll get a feel for what scouting's about, for what the Rockies, you know, front office, you know, is now under Billy Schmidt and how they go about their business. And I know it's been easy, you know, to criticize the organization, and understandably so for several of the things that have taken place over the years. But I think as a Rocky fan, when you listen to it, you'll come away and you'll feel good about the team you root for.
I think last week's podcast also is a really good companion piece, because again, talking with Clint Hurdle and everything he's doing with the minor leaguers. So again, always thinking about the future, and we know there's some really good cornerstone pieces with this team right now. So kind of combined, you're thinking about the future. Those two podcasts are really good. I do have to know before we wrap up here, do you have a favorite Hurdle-ism? Because I feel like Clint Hurdle has so many of these catchphrases. You know, I don't know if anyone's officially called them Hurdle-isms yet, but it should exist. That should be a term.
And yeah. I don't want to steal your thunder, but I think we've all, you know, used that term okay. In the past, maybe even when he was managing. A couple of them I brought out on the podcast, you know, from last week. You know, there's two kinds of players, those that have been humbled, those that are about to be. You know, America's pastime is not baseball. America's pastime is second guessing, and we have to first guess. We talked about that. And that's a great truism. I roll that one out. I borrow that one quite a bit. One of my favorites, I don't think we talked about it in the podcast, Patrick, but it was, you know, Clint was managing, you know, when Barry Bonds was doing all the freakish things he did, right? And had the on-base percentage over 500 and the OPS, you know, of like 6 million, right? And so, in you know, we played the Giants a lot with the Rockies. And somebody invariably in the presser that you sit in every day would ask Clint about, hey, you know, how are you going to deal with Bonds? Or what about Bonds' latest exploits? He hit 7 home runs last week. And Clint would periodically rip off with, yeah, if he keeps this up, he's going to get called up. Right? So he has a – Clint's a really bright guy. He's really quick-witted. And when he was in that space, you know, he could definitely make you laugh. Some of my favorite stuff came from when he was the commissioner of Fantasy Camp, which he did for a number of years, even before he was a manager, because it was right up his alley. Because, you know, when you run Kangaroo Court, all you're doing is busting chops. And there's a lot of material out there with, you know, some people who show up at Fantasy Camp and even getting, you know, their uniform on properly was a challenge. So Clint was in his element back then. And so, yeah, he's funny. He can be a very, very entertaining.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, again, back-to-back shows, as always, are fantastic on the Drew Goodman podcast. Danny Montgomery's the one this week. Get all you need to know about the Rockies' latest draft picks here, because we're going to be seeing them at Coors Field before you know it. So it's super important to stay educated on what's going on with that. Goody, I appreciate your time. As always, looking forward to doing this again next week. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, at DrewGoodman42. At DNVR _Rockies is where you can find all of our wonderful stuff. And appreciate it. We've got a lot of momentum here from this all-star break. I almost called it spring break. It's almost what it is, right? It's the summer break.
Yeah. No, you do. You get a little bounce in your step, and you get, you know, I'm looking forward to going to Milwaukee, and hopefully the Rockies get off to a good start in the second half. And then it'll be a fun week back at Coors Field also. The White Sox, a team we don't see a lot. And then, you know, and then the Dodgers, a team we do see a lot, you know, roll into town, and then it's off to San Diego. So, you know, you and I will be seeing a lot of each other, and there'll be a lot to do. And appreciate the time as always, brother.
It sounds good. But you know what they say about momentum? It's only as good as your next show. So we'll talk to you then.